Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a beautiful Saturday or whenever you're listening to us, if you're listening to the podcast version of this show. We're going to do our best to make your day even just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture right now. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on this show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Before we jump into our weekly topics, I wanted to mention to the listeners that if you've seen Deadpool and Wolverine, and you've seen, well, if you've seen Deadpool and Wolverine and you're looking for the next thing to go and watch at the theaters, I highly suggest going and checking out two movies that are a little under the radar, I would say, as far as being big major Hollywood productions, despite the talent that's attached to one of them. But the movies that I'm referring to are Strange Darling, this really cool little Miramax kind of indie thriller, and then Blink Twice. I went and saw both these over the last week and definitely think that they're, like I said, just kind of flying under the radar. So if you're looking for something to check out and you haven't heard of either of these movies, in particular, Strange Darling, I don't remember seeing any marketing for, check those out. But yeah, we do have a fun-filled show to get into today. So
Blink Twice has got some pretty heavy talent behind. Of course, Channing Tatum leading the cast, and there's a lot of other name actors in the movie. And then it's the directorial debut of Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah, so this, I saw a bunch of trailers for Blink Twice, but I really only saw Strange Darling before like one or two movies. But yet, like you said, the amount of talent that's attached to Blink Twice, I'm surprised it didn't do a little bit bigger numbers than it did.
Well, the interesting thing about that movie is that that was not the original title for it. And Zoe Kravitz fought for the original title for it. But the studio said that the public was not ready for that as a title for a mainstream movie release. And
Keyword Island. And I'm actually glad they didn't go in that direction, because I feel like it would have given away too much.
It's Pussycat Island, except without the actual cat.
Hey, if James Bond movies can get away with it, I don't see why not.
Yeah. I mean, that. But the title of that movie was not Pussy Galore.
It's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the James Bond got away with a lot of double entendre, and you know, certainly in the 60s, much less today. But the closest you get to that with Bond is Octopussy.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a pretty explicit in a way title. I guess not. And they could have maybe done some thematic things, or just kind of, like, I don't know, included cats on the island in Blink Twice. But the movie's cool, and it does have a really good cast. Got a couple of Nepo babies in it. I feel like Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter has been getting a lot of roles lately, and she's fantastic. Their son is in this one. And the whole time I'm watching the movie, I thought he was the preppy killer from the original Purge, but apparently he just looks exactly like him.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. The whole Nepo baby thing, man, I'm not down with that. Like, I think that,
I think that
whole concept is just ridiculous. You don't call somebody a Nepo baby if their dad was a plumber and they go into the plumbing business.
No, I think that's fair. I think it speaks to the amount of privilege and opportunity that some people are given. And while I do think that there's a nuanced argument to be had, I do think it's also fair to say that some people were born with a leg up in the world. So,
I think it's fair to say that it opens some doors, just like it would, you know, anything else. If your dad was a big banker, it's going to open doors for you in the banking industry, you know.
Absolutely. And
your dad was in politics,
it's going to be.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't think that you see that. I don't think you don't see it with the kind of disdain that you see it.
Yeah.
Like that term Nepo baby in the Hollywood or the acting or the entertainment world has this kind of negative connotation on it that it doesn't have in the business world or even the political world.
Zoe Kravitz is my Nepo baby queen. I don't know what you're talking about. I love her and still think that she probably is a, not that she's not gorgeous and extremely talented, but still got two of the most influential people in their respective, well, maybe that's going a little bit far, but very respected in their respective fields. And that's her dad, Lenny Kravitz, and her mom, Lisa Bonet. What's her name?
Lisa Bonet.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I mean, here's the thing that really put this, there's something that happened this week that kind of put that whole thing into perspective for me.
Hit me.
Sigourney Weaver is a Nepo baby, if you want to go by those terms. Her dad was the president of NBC. Her mom was an actress.
I did not know that.
Neither did I until this week.
Who's her mom? I'm sorry.
She was an actress. I mean, she wasn't like a big actress, but she was an actress, you know.
And, I had no idea.
But her dad was president of NBC. If you're going to sit here and look down on the Nepo baby thing, which is the, you know, the connotation that's placed on that is negative, I think Sigourney Weaver is the ultimate argument against that. And there's other actors that you could say are huge arguments against it too. Jamie Lee Curtis is another great example for one, just, you know, off the top of my head here. But Sigourney Weaver, one of the most respected actresses of her generation, one of the biggest stars of the last 50 years, you know, hasn't won an Oscar, but has been nominated several times and has done such a diverse array of things and is not somebody we think of as a Nepo baby, but is somebody that would have had that a little bit of a leg up at the start of her career by being, you know, the daughter of somebody who was powerful in the entertainment industry. But that might get you a job or two. Don't get me wrong. It might get you in the door for an audition.
Yeah.
But if you don't have talent, you don't have the career that Sigourney Weaver has.
Totally agree. I think that's fair. And the reason why Sigourney Weaver came up is going to tie a little bit later into the show with our topics. We're going to be discussing Alien Romulus now that y'all have had a little bit of time to go out and check out that movie. Julio and I haven't had a conversation about it yet.
Well, it also came up because she just got a big award from a film festival in Europe. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she got a big Lifetime Achievement Award from a big film festival in Europe. And there was a big, she doesn't do a lot of interviews, but she did a really interesting sit down with Deadline this week. That's worth checking out if you get a chance to read that on deadline.com. And that's where I learned this, you know, had no idea that, you know, because I've just always known her from, you know, Alien on as an amazing actress and had no idea that she had any kind of familial connections. So very, you know.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I think that whole thing is overblown. I think, yeah, maybe it opens a few doors for you, but you know what? It also opens doors for you if your dad was the president of the United States and you, you know, decide to run for president and then quit because people think you're weird because you know, killed dogs or something.
Whale heads and eat dogs.
And then, you know, what we're not going to get into politics on this show. I do want to get real quickly, and we only got a minute to do this, into familial politics, though. Hell froze over, man. Oasis reuniting. You got a take on that?
I mean, it, like you said, hell froze over. These guys have a contentious relationship that goes back as far as the band themselves. I think they're a good band, Julio. So, like, I'm definitely curious to, I don't know if they're making new music or just going on tour, but
right now it's just a tour.
Time to bury the hatchet.
Yeah, right now it's just a tour. I've seen a lot of hyperbole of this is going to eclipse Taylor Swift, you know, as far as ticket sales goes. And my reply to that is like, yeah, in the UK, and that's it.
Yeah.
Nowhere else. Yeah. Oasis were not that big anywhere else in the world like they were in the UK. Now, in the UK, the demand is huge, and they've already added additional shows. If they come to the States, yeah, there'll be interest, but it isn't going to be Taylor Swift interest.
No.
They're not that current. You know, you're not seeing a bunch of 18-year-old kids that have been dying to see Oasis.
No.
Period.
It's just a fact.
And you might see a bunch of 40-year-olds that are interested in seeing Oasis, but, I mean... Honestly, they're like the fifth best Britpop band, as far as I'm concerned. Like
that's high praise, though.
Yeah, give me Blur any day. Blur won that war for me. Got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had a one long horn and one big eye. Like a Mr. Shaking in the city. It looks like a purple people eater to me. It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looks strange to me.
One-eyed.
Well, he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
I wouldn't eat. You're so tough.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looks strange to me.
One horn.
I said,
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, I know it doesn't have one eye or one horn. It doesn't fly. And it's not purple. But Xenomorph's still kind of a people eater, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I like the song choice. I respect what you're doing here.
They don't eat people, but they just, you know, tear them into pieces and incubate babies in them.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
Yeah. So, we've got a new Alien movie out. Alien Romulus, been out for couple weeks now. We've given you folks a little bit of time to go out and see it if you haven't had a chance yet. And I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about in this movie, but how did you feel? Give me like your overall here, first of all. Were you big on this movie? You down on it? How do you feel about it?
I've been keeping a pin in this conversation. I've been so wanting to ask you about your thoughts on it, but I guess I will go ahead and put my feelings out there first. I enjoyed it. I think it is a wonderfully produced and directed film. The costumes, the set design really feels in universe. Like, it's very well done, I would say, and this isn't revelatory for me to make this comparison. I would say in the same way that The Force Awakens felt like a return to Star Wars, in a lot of ways this felt like a return to Ridley Scott's Alien universe, pre-Prometheus and all of that kind of stuff. And enjoyed watching it. After it was over, I felt a little bit hollow about the whole thing. I will say I loved the performance of Andy, the synthetic in this movie. I thought Kaylee Spaney was really good. There's a couple of things that really dragged the movie down, but I think the third act was unsettling and upsetting in a way that few of the other Alien movies have been since the original kind of concept of the chestburster. So I liked it. I didn't love it.
I think that's fair. I liked it a lot. I'm kind of with you on this. I think that the biggest issue this movie has is that despite what a good director Fede Alvarez is, and he is, and this is a very well-directed movie, it's kind of hard for these creatures to still be scary because we're so familiar with them now. Part of the reason they were so scary in the original Alien is that we didn't know what to expect.
That's a really good point. And I think in a lot of ways it might be that simple.
Yeah. And after, you know, what are we at? Almost 50 years of these movies, 79?
Yeah. Count the AVP movies. I think this was the ninth entry into the franchise.
Yeah. So, you know, we've had a bunch of movies. We've seen the Xenomorphs. We've seen the Facehuggers. We've seen the Chestbursters. We know what these creatures are. It is hard to be scary. I think it did a good job of building the atmosphere, though, and it did a good job of raising the stakes in a way that other Alien movies haven't that made it still scary. I think that there is a big difference between one facehugger and a whole freaking chamber of a ship filled with facehuggers.
Yeah. On that note, I feel, and it sounds like we might be a little bit different sides of this, I feel like one facehugger is a little bit more effective. And the reason why I say this, and we are going to wade into spoiler territory, but we'll save it for a moment. But once we get to a place, the idea of, like, in Aliens, it was, trained Marines going against these supposed perfect killing machines. So when you see several of them taken out with these auto guns and this heavy artillery, it's a little bit easier to suspend your disbelief. To me, when there's dozens of facehuggers and dozens of xenomorphs, it kind of gets to a point where it feels like they become cannon fodder. especially when one of them could take out everybody on the, was it the Nostromo?
The Nostromo.
First time
was,
around?
Yeah, the Nostromo yeah. was the original shop. I can see
it
that.
Both ways.
I think that's one of the reasons the Aliens worked in a way that maybe any other Alien sequel, except for possibly this one, hasn't worked. It's because sure. the first Alien was all about scares and atmosphere. Aliens was an action film.
Yep.
That took place in the same universe and used the same character. So you're the whole vibe of the film was different, and that's why it succeeded.
Yes.
And I think when you're trying to go back to that scares and atmosphere side of it, it becomes a challenge. I do think that this film did a good job of bridging the two.
Yeah, like it kind of splits the difference.
And it's funny because it does it in a way, and this is, we're getting into the real spoiler territory here. This film does actually take place on the timeline in between the original Alien and Aliens.
It does.
Yeah.
And one thing I really liked about it is that we saw a planet. We were inside of that mining colony at that outpost, and I think the world building was really effective in this.
Mm-hmm.
Tonally, it definitely has a lot more in tone with Ridley Scott's vision. However, to appease fans of the franchise, it's almost as if they took every single Alien movie up to this point, including the Prometheus and Covenant, and kind of just amalgamated it all into a Alien fan experience that I feel lacked its own identity because it was trying to be so beholden to everything that came before it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest example of that is you had to have somebody do the line, "Get away from her, you bitch."
Why did they do that? On earth did they do that for?
I wish they hadn't. And the way that the line is delivered, like you could have just left it at "get away from her." And that would have worked for the reference. And
we'd have got it.
Yeah, but then they had to like take a pause and then add the last part of the line. It's like, yeah, okay, you did that. That happened. He said the thing.
Yeah.
And that line also plays a lot different coming out of a guy than it does coming out of a woman.
There was thematic resonance to it in the movie Aliens, which is, when you boil it down to its core, it's really a movie about motherhood, about the themes of motherhood. And so mother protecting her daughter surrogate from another mother that's protecting her offspring. It has weight. And this, it didn't really have meaning. But if I were going to be generous, one of the characters refers to Andy as that a couple times earlier in the movie. So maybe he was using this thing that he knows is a derogatory term because he's been called it. And it's kind of referencing that, but it still felt very, very on the nose. And then if I had another big problem with it, it would be the reprisal of Ian Holm. While he's not the character Ash, he's another synthetic that looks like Ash. And I didn't see the need or the justification for that.
And let's be clear. It is the reprisal of the image of Ian Holm because Ian Holm is no longer with us.
Right.
And that was, them using his face another actor providing the voice. So I that was a bit unnerving. It surprised me, but I did kind of like it. I thought it did.
Okay.
I thought it did add a connection, even though he's not playing the same character either. It makes sense that they would have made several of these androids with the same faces because why would you make new faces for them? So,
every other synthetic that we meet throughout the series is distinct. Well, that's actually not true because David and his name is.
Yeah, and we've seen Bishop, multiple incarnations of Bishop as well. So, I mean, I think that it makes some sense that they'd have, all right, this is the model Andy android and we're making three million Andys. And so out there in the
Malibu
universe,
Barbie or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It makes some sense. I kind of like that. And I kind of liked that, much like in the original Alien, this is the character that's on mission for Weyland-Yutani.
Yeah.
Cause that is one of the other things that's at the heart of the Alien franchise is corporate greed.
Absolutely. And they definitely hammer that home in this one in a way that I think works.
Yeah. And not a timely message at all.
clearly.
Overall, I really liked it. I think the cast is really solid overall. I really mm-hmm. liked, I'm a big fan of Kaylee Spanny, and Isabel Merced is kind of the, you know, as I think it was Heavy Spoilers did a video that I watched about this movie, and mentioned her, and they cut to Will Ferrell in Zoolander saying, "Oh, she's so hot right now."
Yeah.
Because she's kind of one of those actresses of the moment. Next thing we're going to see her in is playing Hawk Girl in James Gunn's Superman next year. So
I didn't realize that. What else has she been in?
She was Dora in the live action Dora the Explorer movie, actually.
Yeah, that I knew.
Among other things.
Yeah, she was good in it. And again, with the kind of themes of motherhood and body horror and all of those things, they do some really effective the chestburster scene in this one was extremely unnerving, even if it wasn't as gory as some of the other ones. Like, there's a lot to like about this movie, and I do come down on the side of positive, as you do as well. If I wanted more out of this movie, I don't know what it looks like anymore. I think I liked Prometheus and Covenant more than most people, so I would have been all right seeing the third of that movie, because it was at least really interesting and taking some big swings.
Well, don't you think in the final act we did get some of that?
Yes. For better or worse, what we end up with is kind of a remake of the end of Alien Resurrection, and it works way, way better this time. I just feel like, in a way, the Black Goose specifically has kind of become almost like time travel or multiverse or any other thing, where it just does what they need it to in that moment with no real care or concern about making it consistent.
Yeah, but I mean, that the alien human hybrid baby that we got at the end of it was truly unnerving in a way that nothing
really
in this
was.
Franchise has been since the original movie.
Yeah,
I and mean, I just thought that really worked, and it was gross.
It really was, yeah. I could see how somebody might think that same creature design is very silly. It really kind of exists on that plane of the uncanny valley where it was upsetting to me. I agree with what you said. I think it was the most kind of disturbing addition to canon since, yeah, maybe the queen or whatever, but definitely one of the most shocking revelations of the franchise.
Well, that's where the atmosphere and the directorial skill comes in. And I think in that regard, Fede Alvarez did an amazing job. We got to take a break. Yeah. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us, and he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces and knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice." So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, "If you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done."
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us online from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, sometimes you never know when to hold them or when to fold them. And sometimes you get a chance that you think you should have folded them, and you get to hold them after all.
Yeah.
And so there's been a little footage that's dropped this week from the movie Deadpool and Wolverine, which has been out, 6 weeks already. Still number one movie at the box office. Probably going to be number one at the box office again this weekend because there's not much coming out this week. But Ryan Reynolds, who, as we know, likes to leak stuff, leaked on social media this week. Yeah, I know that sounds terrible. put out on social media this week a clip of what's technically a deleted scene from Deadpool and Wolverine. I say technically because if you look very carefully at the post-credit scene of this movie, you can see this scene on one of the monitors in the TVA. So that means it is still in the movie, which means it is still something that actually happened in the universe. So it's not like a normal deleted scene where, oh, well, that was a deleted scene. It doesn't count. This is still in the movie.
Judging by the song you played, it's got to relate somehow to Jennifer Garner's Electra.
You're absolutely right.
Nailed it.
Now, who messes around with playing cards in the Marvel Universe? It's our buddy Channing Tatum and playing Gambit. So yeah, this scene is technically in the movie if you look carefully, but it was actually shot and intended to be its own little post-credits cutscene bit.
Sure.
And it's just one quick little scene, but it's one quick little scene that has, I think, implications on whether we might see this character again. Because I think the implication was, and we'll, again, if for some reason in a month and a half you haven't seen Deadpool and Wolverine yet, we'll put up the spoiler warning here. Deadpool and Wolverine, hopefully you've seen it already. Everybody in the world seems like it's seen it twice at least. So, just in case, spoiler warning here. You know, we had this big climactic battle at the end of the movie, and it looked like several characters sacrificed themselves so that Deadpool and Wolverine could get away and get back to the world and fix everything, basically. One of the characters that it looked like we lost at that point was Channing Tatum playing Gambit, which if you know the history here, Gambit is a character that Channing Tatum has always wanted to play. He got booked in, I think, 2018 to be the lead in a solo Gambit movie that never happened. And so it was kind of this big in-joke slash favor to a friend thing that happened in this movie, that because Channing Tatum and Ryan Reynolds are friends, that Ryan Reynolds gave his bro a chance to live his dream and play this character that he always wanted to play. But we've got this cutscene now where we know that Deadpool and Wolverine escaped the void via a sling ring. Like Doctor Strange uses, where it opens up a portal and you can travel between dimensions or however.
Marvel Sparkler.
Right, Marvel Sparkler, exactly. So this cutscene is a close-up on Channing Tatum's Gambit, and in his eyes you see the reflection of a portal opening, and you see him reacting to that. So the implication here is that we have not seen the last of Channing Tatum as Gambit. And there's precedent for this because it also looked like we lost Daphne Keene's X-23 in that scene, and then by the end of the movie they had rescued her and she came and to live on Deadpool's world with Logan and everybody.
Yeah.
So, first of all, do you think this means we're going to see Channing Tatum as Gambit again? Or is this just Ryan Reynolds doing what he does and being wishful? And because, I mean, that's how we got a Deadpool movie in the first place.
He wills these things into existence, right?
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to do this so bad that he leaked the test footage online and caused the reaction that created the demand that they eventually made the movie. So is this Ryan Reynolds saying, I really want my bro to have a Gambit movie or to show up as Gambit again and trying to will that into existence? Or is this is already decided and they're just opening the door? Or is this just a fun scene? What do you think?
It's the first or second one, right? In a idealistic view of things, it would be Ryan Reynolds knew that Gambit would have been a beloved character portrayed by Channing Tatum, so we're finally getting him on screen. And that would be awesome if it was as simple as that. However, being a part of the system that he became a part of in order to do the Deadpool and Wolverine, i.e. joining the MCU in the first place, there is typically a lot of oversight involved in that. So I don't think that there are as many opportunities for just chance in that way. And on the heels of this recent X-Men series that was just beloved critically, the fans loved it. It was a hit for Disney Plus, and Gambit was one of the standouts of that series. So now it almost seems like it would be foolish not to use Channing Tatum as Gambit again. So I do believe we'll see him again. I don't know if it's going to be in the context of a standalone movie, but what I wonder is, and kind of back to the song, know when to hold him and know when to fold him, like, was it a good choice to hold him? Had the Gambit movie come out in 2015 or whenever it was originally, you know, kind of in development, and has been the success that it would be now on the heels of Gambit coming back into social consciousness and Channing Tatum being the enduring star that he is, I feel like this is very serendipitous. Like, the timing is so good that it would only make sense to have him.
I don't know that it means that we're going to get more than another small role. Like, I think that I think he shows up in Secret Wars or Doomsday or both.
That would be the easy thing.
But I think I think that we're leading up to some kind of soft reboot, and I don't know how many characters continue to be played by the same actors after that.
Yeah.
I think some of them will, and I kind of hope so. And so possibly he could be one, but I think Deadpool's going to be. I think, you know, as much as they joked about Disney's going to make Hugh Jackman do this till he's 90, I think it's Ryan Reynolds that's going to be playing Deadpool till he's 90.
But I
don't know. But here's my next question. Does that mean Gambit's the only survivor here? Do we see Wesley Snipes' Blade again? Do we see Jennifer Garner's Elektra again? Do we see any of the other characters that we saw at the end of the movie here?
I feel like because Daphne Keen was brought back, as you said, it kind of sets the precedent right there. And because Blade is the Daywalker, they would have had to have a pretty specific arsenal to be able to take out Blade. If Elektra survived, that's just a freaking miracle, really.
Well, I mean, what you're worried about here is Eliath coming in and eating everything. And there's no defense against that. Like, the Daywalker doesn't just walk through that.
That's actually a really good point that I didn't. Yeah. Good point. So, well, or does he just pass it through its body like anything that you eat, and that he just comes out the other side whole?
I think you're trying to ice skate uphill here, Jeremy.
Yeah, that's a good point. So unless that same sling ring could be applied to all of the characters, then it's probably pretty unlikely that we will see others. I don't feel like any of them has the kind of inertia behind them that Gambit does, considering this recent relaunch of the 90s X-Men. Like, I don't know that Gambit would have been the popular character then that he could be now, where I don't think Elektra and Blade have that kind of momentum behind them.
I mean, I could definitely see the argument for Blade. People loved Wesley Snipes' Blade, and people still love Wesley Snipes' Blade, and it was the best surprise in the movie.
Agreed.
I mean, it would be fun to see him show up in Secret Wars, because I think we've got the opportunity.
I'm not going to play the age card with Channing Tatum, and I'm not going to play the age card with Ryan Reynolds, but Wesley Snipes is aging up there, and for a character that is essentially immortal, it's a little different.
I'm not saying we see him again after Secret Wars, don't get me wrong. I think if he's in Secret Wars, he dies in Secret Wars.
That could definitely happen, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like we're gonna see a lot more of this kind of stuff in Secret Wars, and I'm hoping we get the opportunity to see a lot more stuff, and even a lot more left field stuff than we saw in this movie. Here's what you know what I want in Secret Wars?
Hit me.
I want Lucasfilm Howard the Duck.
We've been waiting for that.
That's what I want. Give me that and I'll be happy. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Mm-hmm. These sensations make me feel the pleasures of a normal man. These sensations barely end, so leave them for another day. I've got the spirit, lose the feeling, take the shuffle away. Stairs into no man's land. Lights are flashing, cars are crashing, getting frequent now. I've got the spirit, lose the feeling, let it out somehow.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. Jeremy, if nothing else, this has been the most musically diverse episode of Let's Go Pensacola ever.
I think that's fair.
We've gone from Purple People Eater to The Gambler to Joy Division.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, I mean, short of throwing some polka in there or something, I don't know.
that was last week or the week before.
Yeah, valid. So, the reason I'm playing that Joy Division song, and there's no way anybody listening to this would know this because nobody has seen this movie, but it is used in the new version of The Crow, which came out, last week? Which nobody went to see. Are you surprised by the fact that nobody went to see this movie, Jeremy?
By the amount of impressions I felt like it was getting on social media, I am. I felt like all those people that were defending the movie didn't even go see it.
There were people defending the movie?
There were people that were on me about the fact that I thought it looked like they Joker-fied everything. I know that's not exactly an original take. Look, there's no such thing as an original take anymore. People, just get on board with this. but I feel like, oh, man, I don't even know where to begin with this. I'm a huge fan of the original The Crow.
That's the thing.
But I would be the first to admit that this movie was so much of a product of the time and the circumstance and the death of Kurt Cobain and the death of Brandon Lee and the music that was central to the MTV and Spencer's Gifts and all of those things at the time. Like, it wasn't the movie, it was the aura, and this movie does not have aura.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Who asked for this? That's you hear this a lot when you're talking about remakes or you're talking about, you know, revisiting things and things like that, and it's like, who's this for? Clearly this was not for the audience that loved the original Crow. But it doesn't seem to speak to anybody now either. Like, it tried to do both and did neither, from what I could see from the trailers and from what I can see from everything that built up on this. Like, I don't know.
The lead, but neither of us saw the movie for those folks at home. Not yet.
And I don't know who wanted to see this movie. And even if they did, once they saw the trailer, even if there was enthusiasm about this, I think it was killed by the trailers.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, I think they could have helped the case for this movie tremendously by not naming the characters Eric and Shelley.
Exactly.
I know with the gift of hindsight, you can, but The Crow is a universal story. It can be told about all sorts of characters and work in that context. But like you said, if it wasn't for the fans of the original, then why use the characters from the original?
I mean, I'm of two minds on that. I understand why they did, because they're trying to, there have been a number of Crow sequels or spinoffs or whatever done over the years, none of which connected the way that original film did. So the feeling probably was, well, people care about Eric Draven, so we're going to give them Eric Draven. And that's true to an extent. But people care about Brandon Lee as Eric Draven. And trying to revive that character without being able to bring that actor back from the dead is virtually impossible. And let's be honest, that the fact that Brandon Lee died making that movie is part of what drove the success of the movie. It drove curiosity. It drove people to go see it.
Yeah.
Which yeah. is
so
morbid.
I rewatched it the other day in preparation for the new movie, again, that I have not seen yet. But I rewatched the original movie the other day, and you've said it before on air, and I always, it hurts a part of my heart that it's not a great movie. It's just a moody piece of filmmaking with some really interesting design choices and everything, again, just to yeah. hammer this home, it's everything surrounding the movie that made it what it was, and you can't or shouldn't recapture that because it was built around tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go out on a limb and say it's not even Alex Proyas's best movie.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. You, Dark City, I think, is a better made film. The narrative thrust of The Crow is just so very simple. You don't even really, it's just ciphers of characters. Like, there's no real characterization other than just the small amount of flashbacks that Shelley gets. So, like, I appreciate that this new movie at least wants to acquaint us with the characters before what happens. But their decision to kind of focus on graphic violence, I feel like, kind of misses what the original movie even was, because The Crow was like goth Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, he's like curing Darla of substance abuse, and like, it's very like messianic in a lot of ways. And I think in this new one, he's just like this killing machine that's like decapitating people and stuff. And it's like, that's not what I want out of the Crow movie. I kind of like him as this avenging angel, not just some bloodthirsty maniac murdering people.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been much more interested in this film if it wasn't Eric Draven. Like, they could probably have done everything they've done with this same film and just had it not be Eric and Shelley.
Yes.
And that would have, I think, gotten at least some more people on board. But I think the idea of them revisiting that story in a way that was so alien to what that story was originally turned a lot of people off. Like, this does not in any way look like that film.
No, like, no. The visual style is so much of a departure. And I know, like, City of Angels is not a great film. I think there was a more interesting version of that story before Weinstein Company stepped in and kind of were like, no, we want the original Crow again. But what it did have also is some really distinct set design and aesthetics and lighting and atmosphere that made it feel ethereal and kind of otherworldly. And this new one just kind of looks like another action movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I go back to the same thing. It's like, yeah, everything, every step along the way of this movie, the reaction has been nothing but negative. So the fact that it came out and fell with a thud doesn't really shock me.
No.
But I mean, the fact that it thudded so hard when there are other movies that you had that same kind of reaction from that did marginally better. I mean,
hit me with an example.
Morbius.
Okay. Yeah. Fair.
I mean, fair. You know, Morbius certainly made more money than The Crow did. I mean,
yeah, there are definitely some like parallels there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In more ways than one. But I mean, yeah, there was a lot of negativity about that movie. And then, I mean, to the extent that it was so mocked that Sony misread the mocking and thought people wanted it back in theaters.
Yeah. But, yeah.
But it made more money than this movie did. I think even Madam Web did better than this movie did.
So what are we looking at? $4 million, I think, so far.
Yeah. And I mean, I have seen, I want to say that I did see somebody compare this to Madam Web in terms of them both being equally bad.
Yikes.
Which I caught Madam Web on a plane fairly recently. It's good that I was on a plane because I couldn't walk out of it.
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not a good movie, and I feel bad for everybody that's in it because there's a lot of good actors in it, but it's, and there's good actors in this too.
Bill Skarsgård is awesome.
Yeah. And you know, FKA Twigs, and you know, it's just, It's just one of those things that somebody should have stopped. This should have been stopped somewhere along the lines. This should have at least been, you know, they should have approached this with more caution than they did, at the very least. And maybe they ended up not putting out a perfect movie, and maybe it was going to bomb no matter what. But, you know, maybe if you put some energy into the script and some energy into the design, and you go back and look at what really made the original Crow, and no, I'm not saying that means you got to kill Bill Skarsgård, because that's just stupid. But
that sounds like that's what you're saying.
No. But you know, there are other elements of that movie that made it the success that it was beyond just Brandon Lee. That drove a lot of curiosity, but that didn't drive the staying power of that film. You know, look at the soundtrack.
Because culture was more monolithic at the time, I feel like that it would be hard to recapture that, just generally speaking.
Well, and there you go. Like, it comes down to, if you can't come up with some way to say something new or improve on something, why are you doing it in the first place? If it's not just a cash grab, which is what this ends up looking like. And, you know, seems like that's what it was. And it's a failed cash grab because it did not grab cash. But
could we see another Crow movie in the future that succeeds?
Somebody will try again. The property has too much mystique around it to not try again at some point. It's going to be a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, we could. And when there is, we'll talk about it on the show. But we're done for this week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.